Blog Talk Radio.
His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. Malik Zulu Shabazz.
It is indeed my honor and great joy and privilege to be invited by Brother and Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, who is one of the greatest student leaders of all time.
I'm talking about terrorism now. We want a war on terrorism. The war on terrorism should have started 400 years ago. Bring the flag, brother. Bring the flag.
Bring the flag. Bring.
Because I'm here to tell you that false patriotism will not get you out of this.
Right.
Holding a bandana flag around your head will not get you out of this. Huh? Flag on your antenna in your car will not get you out of this. You might be saying, God bless America. But when did America ever bless God? You might be saying, God bless America. But God might be damning America at this very hour.
What's all this shit I see on here about harassment and all that bullshit, rap for power? You sumbitches, get out and get a goddamn job and make a constructive citizen out of yourself and stop all this bullshit. You wouldn't have to have no fucking rally for power. You got that message, motherfucker?
Black power. Black power. Black power. And more black power to my people. This is your brother, your comrade in arms, a soldier in this war with you, Sean Kwali. I'm broadcasting live once again to you from the dirty, the dingy, the dungeon hells and smells of North America. As always, we count it a privilege, we count it a joy, and it's definitely an esteemed blessing to be talking to you wherever you may be found. In 196,940,000 square miles of planet Earth, it is a blessing and an honor and a privilege to make your acquaintance on this platform that we call and consider Black Power Radio, taking over the airwaves and making the airwaves a real concrete reality once we get off of the radio listening airwaves. We got work to do. And as always, it's beautiful that we're able to send you blessings of Assalamu Alaikum, Hotep, Shalom, Shalom, free the land, and black laws for all black people. We count that a blessing to be able to send you those greetings, not only from myself and from the New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, but sending it to you from our five-star general, a humble brother, but definitely a warrior, a seasoned veteran, one who don't take no stuff and don't let no stuff be taken. I'm talking about the warrior lawyer, that one who understands the white man's law, but more importantly understands black man's law, the black man and black woman's law, and understands that if we don't do something for ourselves, and if we don't unite and pull together in the spirit of Harambe, that we will perish. I'm talking about our national chairman, Dr. and attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, the warrior lawyer, and the black man that's on the scene in the spirit of all of our great ancestors and all of those who have come in the spirit of justice, freedom, equality, and also an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a limb for a limb, and a life for a life. We welcome you and thank you for being with us. And as always, we have never invited you to this broadcast to waste your time. But we invite you to this broadcast for serious business. We bring you to the broadcast in the spirit of revolutionary Pan-Africanism. We bring you to this broadcast in the spirit of revolutionary black nationalism. we bring you to this broadcast in the spirit of freedom or death. It's freedom for the black man and black woman, and death to the oppressor and its power structure. That's what I'm talking about. Black Power Radio. We are excited tonight. I know it's a heavy, heavy introduction, but we are excited tonight to be able to, God willing, grace the airwaves with a legend. And I'm not talking about many of our legends that you read about in the history books or those that you may Google and read about, you know, on the internet or something like that. I'm talking about a living legend, one who is still here among us on this plane, in this realm, and one who is able to share the vision of black liberation and freedom for black people. We're talking about our dear brother, Baba Mukasa Ricks. And I'm talking about, just in saying that name, you're talking about a long, lengthy history of struggle. For those of you, no matter what your camp is, no matter what your background is, if you identify with black power, with defining, developing, and defending that which is in the best interest of black people and the black nation, then you owe this black man right here, and I owe this black man right here, a Panther salute, an original salute, a revolutionary salute. We owe this brother. For this is a brother, as he will tell you himself, who walked the gravel roads of Alabama and all through Mississippi, all on the West Coast in California, all on the East Coast, all up north in Detroit and other areas, building and organizing with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., building and organizing with Stokely Carmichael, later known as Kwame Ture, building and organizing with Bob Brown, and organizing with so many others, and if I didn't say, Minister Malcolm X as well, but so many others that this brother has built with and organized with for the liberation and salvation of the black nation, not only for his generation and for his time, but building as well for our time, building for 2011, building for what we're going through right now in this dark hour, this gloomy hour where it seems like there's no light in sight. And it seems like everything outside of your four walls is hopeless. It seems as though the freedom fighters who have come before us didn't even make strides. You wouldn't even be able to tell with your naked eye looking outside your door that we had so many great ones who have come amongst us and who have fought for us and have worked to advance the cause and advance the flag. You couldn't even tell it today if you looked with your naked eye. But this black man will, by the Creator's grace, will grace the airwaves and will be able to wake you up and shake you up to the real reality of what's going on. For all of you who are so happy now that you have a melanated face in the white man's house, for those of you that have taken the pill and you have been put to sleep, and you believe now that there is no reason for a revolutionary struggle, there's no reason to fight for black nationalism, there's no reason to fight for freedom and independence and self-determination, this black man gonna wake you up. And hell, Black Power Radio is going to wake you up, shake you up, quake you up. There's no way we could be suffering the way that we're suffering. And I say correctly every time in the hells of North America and really all over the world. And then we let you stay asleep and we don't shake you and push you and move you towards organization and organizatory efforts. We don't disturb you. We wouldn't love you if we didn't disturb you in your comfort zone, your comfortability. Mukasa Ricks wouldn't love you if he didn't make you uncomfortable and make you move and make us, me and all of us, move towards a united effort and a united front. Doctor and attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz would not love you if he didn't push you and drive us towards self-determination and a united effort and a black liberation front. We have to be pushed because we have been made Negroes. We have been made niggers. We have been made other than our natural selves. And so the Negro is comfortable with the crumbs from the white man's table. The nigger is comfortable with the breadcrumbs that fall to the floor and we're able to grovel at the feet of the slave master or those that are in the power structure. We're comfortable. We've been put into a position or forced into a position of comfortability. And so we have to be pushed out of this inertia and forced out of this position and this posture so that we can do what it was that Sister Harriet Tubman was building for and organizing for. So we can do what it was that Marcus Mosiah Garvey was pushing for and organizing for. So that we can do what Bishop Henry McNeil Turner was pushing and organizing for. So that we can do that which our ancestors thought we would do and be doing in this time that we live in. It ain't shake 'em up and dance time. This is not the New Black Panther Party for Hollywood. This is the New Black Panther Party for self-defense. And we have to know we're under attack. We tell you darn near in every single paper and edition of the New Black Panther paper that black is under attack. And we always point to incidences that let you know that black is on the attack, that our people are in trouble, in a state of emergency, that our people all over the country and all over the world are robbed of self-knowledge, robbed and spoiled. We have been made to hate ourselves and hate our ancient histories and hate the history of today, that we have been made to not appreciate ourselves and not appreciate our elders and not appreciate our leaders and our teachers and our babas and those who have come to give us the wisdom and the guidance so that we don't get tripped up and flipped up and make many of the same errors and the same mistakes that were made in the 50s and in the 40s, in the 30s and even into the 60s, into the 70s, even into the 80s, so that we don't make the same mistake again. And so, my dear brothers and sisters, hell, buckle your seatbelts. Fasten them tight. Because we coming in the spirit and in the name of a beautiful, bald-headed, bold black man. 100% uncompromising, 100% unrelenting, 100% unflinching, 100% no strings attached. I'm talking about a beautiful black man we call the Black Power General, Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad. I couldn't go any further without letting you know that we come in his name. and that we coming in the name of all the great revolutionaries. It's a beautiful time. And so, hell, let's not delay. If our brother is on the line, hell, let's not delay. And so, hell, let's see if he's on with us now. 770-465, you're on the air, Black Power Radio.
Yes, my brother Africa.
Hey, Black Power, my Baba, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, brother Africa. How you doing?
I'm doing blacktastic. Doing blacktastic. It is an honor and a blessing to hear your voice, my brother.
Thank you, brother Africa. Thank you very kindly.
Yes,
Black
sir.
And so
the people are excited. We first of all want to just thank you, my brother, for everything that you have done in the cause of liberation and salvation for the black nation. I kind of, you know, I don't want to assume that everybody knows who you are, because we may have some, you know, as we say, some wet behind the ears listening. And so could you please, sir, kind of explain to us who you are and how you got started in this movement?
Well, my name is Mukasa. I was once known as Willie Ricks, and I joined a movement, the City and Movement, the Freedom Ride Movement, about 1960-61. And as a young man, I became a freedom fighter. I joined in with a group called SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And I came in a time when we were forced to go in the back door, say yes sir to all white people. We were being beaten and hung, and our testicles cut off and sticking our mouths on the side of the streets on Friday night for the fun of European or white people. We couldn't get jobs, like we still can't get jobs today. We lived in neighborhoods where they didn't pave our streets. We lived in shacks. We worked for $2-3 a day. And we were in such a bad condition that it forced a lady named Rosa Parks to sit on the bus and say, I'm not going to the back. At one time, we had to ride on the back of all the buses, go in bathroom that said black only. If you went into one that said white only, they would shoot you or kill you. And that by 1955, Rosa Parks sat on the bus and Martin King stood up and built a movement known as the Montgomery Improvement Association, or we often know it as the bus boycott. But from the bus boycott, it gave inspiration to young people. And by 1960, students from A&T sit down at the white lunch counter and say, we're not going to the back. And by them doing that, they created what was known as the sit-in movement. And the sit-in movement, students all over the South began to go to place and just go in the front door and define white racism. And when they did that, they were shot, they were bombed, some was killed, but we kept fighting. And then by 1961, a lady named Ella Baker and Martin King came together and helped us create a youth movement, and we created a youth movement. We named this youth movement SNCC, known as the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and SNCC was the organization that sent people, students out to do sit-in movements and to organize workers, maids, and to deal with any kind of problems and issues that black people faced in the cities. And by 1961, we also decided to send SNCC people to places like Mississippi and fight for voter registration, because at that time the Democratic Party didn't allow us to vote. And when we tried to vote, they would murder us, like they murdered Mr. They murdered Mega Evans. They murdered Mr. Damon down in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. They went to his house one night and just started shooting. And when they started shooting, he started shooting back and put his family out the back door. And when his family went out the back, they threw gas bombs and bombs in his house and burned him up in his house. He died in his house, but he died in a gun battle. And then you had Robert Lee, Mr. Lee, Herbert Lee. In Poplarville, Mississippi, he went to try to register to vote. A county commissioner came out and shot him in the head with a shotgun and wasn't nothing done about it. Mega Evans tried to register people to vote. He was shot down in the back by a European named D'Army Beckwith, and he was held as a hero in the state of Mississippi. But there was so many. But for the sit-in movement, they put bombs in our church and blew up a church in Birmingham and killed four little black girls in broad daylight for trying to register to vote. In the state of Mississippi alone, they burnt down 76 churches in the summer of 64, and we can't count the numbers of murderers, people that got murdered, like Cheney, Swanee, and Goodman, and other people. And beaten, like a lady named Fannie Lou Hamer was beaten and beaten and beaten. And that we were under attack for going in the front door, for trying to register to vote, for trying to be an equal citizen, and that we were slaves fighting against slavery. And that by 1964, we organized what we call as the Mississippi Democratic Party, a black Democratic Party, one part of the white Democratic Party. And we had our own voting. And we voted black people in office, and because the white people wouldn't let us get in the Democrat and vote, so we voted our own election, and we elected our own leaders. And even though America and the United States would not recognize them, we recognized that we couldn't be a part of the white structure. And by 1964-65, we told the Democratic Party and the Republican Party to go to hell. And we went into Alabama, and we organized our own party, and we was known as we organized in the name of different counties we were in. And in Lowndes County, we organized the Lowndes County Freedom Organization, and we became known, and we picked up guns and started defending ourselves when the white plantation owners or the sheriff or the police or just white people or the Ku Klux Klan and other Democrats or even sometimes Republicans, however they call themselves, they were all blonde hair, blue eyes, pale skin, and when they come to attack us, we would shoot back, and we start being known as the first group inside the civil rights movement to pick up guns in defense of our people. And later, a group in Bogalusa, Louisiana, Deacons for Defense, they picked up guns and defended, and we helped them organize. But we became known as the Black Panther Party. And the first Black Panther Party was formed in Lowndes County, Alabama, in 1965. And then later, we brought in Huey Newton, we brought in Bobby Seale, we brought in young people from New York and Philadelphia and let them form chapters of the Black Panther Party. And the one in California became known as the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense because they were so enthused and inspired to see young black men in the rural areas of this country picking up guns, defending ourselves, our people, and our kind. When we tried to register to vote in Alabama, the Democratic Party, they put us off the land, and we had to, and thousands of people, many people had to live out doors in tents. Babies were born out in tents. It rained, and it was just like the people in Haiti today, just like they got people living in Haiti today. But they would come down there and shoot in the tents, and we set up a defense, and when they would come down to shoot, we would shoot back, and sometimes we engaged in some very deadly gun battles. And fortunately, the deadly gun battles, there were white people dead, and our people, we didn't die in those tents because we definitely had a good defense up. But the first Black Panther Party was born in Lowndes County, Alabama. And then from the Lowndes County, Alabama, we later put together the Black Power Movement. And the Black Power Movement was born out of a march from Memphis, Tennessee to Jackson, Mississippi, with Dr. King, Kwame Ture, who we know as Stokely Carmichael, the Deacons for Defense, Dr. Floyd McKissick out of North Carolina, and other freedom fighters. But we had battles, and they bombed us, and whatever, but we had to fight. So I was in many demonstrations in the Albany Movement and with Dr. King, but SNCC started the Albany Movement and later brought Dr. King in, and we participated in marches and demonstrations and even went to jail together. And in Birmingham, we demonstrated and protested and fought right beside Dr. King. In Selma, SNCC had organized voter registration movements in Selma, and 5 years later, Dr. King came in and even helped popularize the Selma movement. And then we had great movement in Montgomery, the Montgomery bus boycott. And then in 1965, SNCC went back into Montgomery, and Dr. King came in after with SNCC, and we had demonstrations. We were ran over by horses and beaten, just like we were beaten on the Elvin Pelham Bridge in Selma. So I come out of a movement of liberation and learned a lot about our history and began to point toward revolutionary movements. And one of the last point I make is after the so-called Black Power Movement, and we began to help and participate in burning down the cities and under the slogan Black Power, we led a campaign against war, against the war in Vietnam, against the imperialist war in Vietnam, and we stretched our movement not only to the anti-war movement or to the Vietnam War. We stretched it to the war and the movement in Angola, Mozambique, South Africa, Zimbabwe, Guinea-Bissau. We joined hands with Sekou Toure and Kwame Nkrumah in Guinea. We joined hands with the Mau Maus in Kenya, who was cutting the white man's head off and fighting for independence there. We joined in with the Algerian Revolution. We joined in, of course, with Cuba, and we began to get cues and points from Fidel Castro and Che Guevara. And we also joined in with many liberation movements in Africa, in Angola, Augusta Nato, in Mozambique, Frelimo and Samora Machel, in Southern Africa, SWAPO, in South Africa, ANC, PAC, but we internationalized our movement. So I come from a whole history of movements for liberation, and today I'm involved in many of those same movements because we definitely are not free, my brother, Africa.
Definitely.
Are you there?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm here. Definitely we're not free. It's interesting. I thank you for dropping that wisdom on us in that history, because many people believe that the Black Panther Party, or that the symbol of the Panther, was used in Oakland, California in 1966. And so what were your thoughts on Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale when you all first met? What was your first thoughts and your first interaction?
Well, what SNCC would do, SNCC was the primary organization, and our job was to inspire organizations and movements to get started. So we started many local organizations that went on independent for itself, like the Albany Movement. Even though SNCC started, it had its own autonomy. It was independent of us, even though we served and helped it. The Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party was a state party, and we staffed it and helped run it, but we had local leadership, and they made the basic decisions, and we helped carry out those decisions. Same thing with the Dallas County Movement in Selma. Same thing with movements all over Mississippi and all over South Georgia, in America's Georgia, Lee County, Georgia, Dawson, Georgia, where they used to throw dynamite bombs on our porch probably every weekend, in Lee County, where they used to do machine gun shoot-bys and burn down our churches. So we created many, many movements. So by 1965, when we created the Black Panther Party in Lyons County. It had its own local organization, and then nationally, groups were so, young people were so inspired that they ran to us with enthusiasm, wanting to put together Black Panther chapters. So Huey Newton and Bobby Seale, they were just young boys under us, but we put them together, and we loaned them our name. Stokely Carmichael was the honorary. These were honorary positions. Prime Minister Rapp was Minister. Rapp H. Rapp Brown was Minister of Justice. James Foreman had some international position, and I was just organizing for them. And we all worked, and we let them use our office and let them use our machinery, and we just trained them and sent them out there. And they weren't nobody special, but it was just some young kids that we had, young brothers that wanted to be revolutionary, and we sent them out, and we even sent them on their first international trip to Cuba and got them international attention, and let them use our name, SNCC, and related ourselves to them because we already had international fear, attention, and respect, and they were not even known, but by our relationship with them, we were able to build them up and then let them be independent and then go out on their own, and they developed into their own personality and did whatever they felt they wanted to do, and we were no longer connected with them, SNCC, but we gave them their independence completely.
Okay, how you doing, Baba? This is Amira.
Hey. Hi, Mother Africa. How are you?
How you doing? Thank
you.
A couple questions for you in the chat room.
Well, you're welcome. Okay, I'm honored.
What do you think about America's planning for the black man? That's what the chat room asked.
What do I think about America's plan for the black man?
Yeah.
Well, America's plan for African people, period, is slavery, oppression, prison, jail, starvation, taking our homes, drugging our children, drugging our people, working us for prices and money and salaries where we can't pay light bill, gas bill, water bill, rent, dividing our families, and that it's not just for black men, it's black women, black children, African people, period. And not only are they exploiting us here in the United States, but we're being exploited in Africa and anywhere in the world, especially in the Caribbean, where you got over 350 million Africans that the economic capitalist system is controlling, and the people are in the same condition there as we are here. And on the continent of Africa, where you got the richest land in the world, diamonds, gold, oil, rubber, zinc, tea, copper, pearl, cobalt, manganese, and even coltan. Coltan is the mineral that they use to make all the electronics work, including the cell phone, including your VCR, the your car radios and the airplanes and to function and the rockets that they send into the sky, but all the electronics, which make coltan a very valuable mineral, which 80% of it is found in the Congo, and these imperialist capitalist groups that need coltan to make their machinery work or to build up their nation, they put together armies throughout the Congo, and in the last 5 years, 5 million people has been murdered over coltan, and of course the Congo is rich with diamonds, gold, oil, and thousands of other resources, and they're down there getting all those resources, and the people where these resources come from are literally starving to death. And that, so the whole continent has been raped since when they came and raped us from Africa. Of course, we fought them. There were many great revolutionaries in Africa, like Yasser Adawar, like Nzinga, like Shaka, and many other warriors throughout Africa that fought. But we were, once they murdered, like in Zimbabwe, Cecil Rhodes murdered 65,000 people, and then changed the name of the country to Rhodesia and stole all the richness from fruits to diamonds to gold to oil and all the richness that they could steal, even destroyed a great empire, and named it Rhodesia after a white man named Cecil Rhodes, who left a will to educate white children called the Rhodes Scholar, where they get hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, millions of dollars a year to go to school. And then in the Congo, Leopold cut the ears of Africans off if they didn't work for them hard enough. If they didn't work for the white people hard enough, they cut their feet off or cut their hands off. So when you understand how the Europeans of how colonialism came to Africa and the crimes they committed against African people, they committed these crimes all over the continent of Africa, 12 million square miles from Gambia to Somalia, from Tunisia down to Lesotho, South Africa, but 12 million square miles of land they came. And matter of fact, in 1804, they created a conference called the Berlin Conference, and that's when they met and divided the world up and divided Africa up into little pieces and gave Africa to every white nation, got a piece of Africa, and they raped it, put it in slavery, and put us on slave ship, and the name of the slave ship was called This Slave Ship Jesus, took our names from us, like whatever your name is, Jones, Smith, Jackson, that means that that's your slave master's name. If your name is Jones, that means you lived on the Jones plantation, Mr. Jones nigga, Mr. Jones slave. And that, so when you look at that, you see that your culture, your history, your identity has been robbed and stolen from you. And the way they made you start speaking English, Spanish, Portuguese, and all the white languages, if you spoke your African language, they cut your tongue out. And that they would give us drugs. Give drugs to men to make them real sexual active, and they would put you in a room with 3, 4, 5 women. When they would buy you off the slave ship, they might buy 5 women and 1 man, and they would give him Spanish fly and other kinds of drugs that make you sexually crazy, and they would make you have sex with all these women in order to impregnate them, where they could get more slaves to work for nothing and rape and do whatever they would do to them, murder or whatever. But they make you create all these slaves with no responsibility and family, and they destroyed the concept of family with us. So we have been totally colonialized, Europeanized, enslaved, in prison, miseducated in the public schools, forced foreign religion on us, and the white religion or the European religion upon us. So we have no sense of identity, don't know who we are. So if we are going to be liberated, we have to now come to know who we are, where we come from, where our land is, where our culture is, and our history. And the true history of African people must be told. Again, we're not black people. We're not Afro-Americans. We're not niggers. We're not Negroes. We're not African-Americans. We're not Americans. We are African. We're not Jamaicans. We're not Trinidadians. All of these are European names. We are African people. And inside Brazil, you will find at least 25 million people of African descent, Africans in Brazil. But we have been divided up so much that we have no sense of identity, and we can only communicate with the ones that speak certain white languages. If you colonized by the British, they speak England. And so if you can colonize by the British, you only speak England, or so-called English. If you're colonized by the French, they made you speak only and understand not your language and your culture, but only talk and listen to the French. You speak French, so you can only communicate with other Africans that speak French, and they made it where we couldn't communicate with each other. so until we began to have a sense of identity and know who we are and where we come from, and know that we have to come together, not just know people that speak England or English, but we have to know people that speak the language, I mean, that know people and come together regardless of what language they speak, and be able to communicate our history, the fact that we started mathematics, science, chemistry, engineering, biochemistry, nuclear physics, law, philosophy, music, medicine, art in Africa thousands and thousands of years ago. We had great kingdoms in Africa like Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Kemet, Zimbabwe, and Zaire, the Congo Empire, and thousands of other empires throughout Africa. And that it was us that started mathematics, science, and chemistry, and engineering, physics, and even it's known that we communicated with other planets. And it's, some go as far as say that we even travel to planets and whatever. But we know that the Dogon people in Mali, where they built one of the first educational centers of early universities in the world, had great communication with other planets, and that we don't, and there, even in certain areas of Africa, you find civilizations that deal with flying and navigation of the oceans and seas, giving rise to mathematics and traveling throughout the world, building pyramids and building historical monuments and building and teaching mathematics and whatever. But our civilization is so great, and until we understand that, then we will continue to be colonialized and beaten down and miseducated and misled, and where the black man and black are becoming extinct. And it's only the woman that has been even much stronger than the man, and that the woman has kept us alive, has kept the family together as much as she could, that even when the brothers are beaten down and has given up, it's the woman that keep fighting, keep holding the children up, and even holding the men up. Our women, our African women, are stronger than our African men. And then if there's going to be a revolution, if there's going to be a revolutionary movement, the African woman must play a leadership role. The African woman must be allowed to have her personality. The African woman must create an African organization within every organization and teach the organization how to respect and honor the African woman. But if there's going to be a revolution, the African woman must play an equal role, a greater role. There cannot be a revolutionary movement without the full participation of the African woman, and she must be free to do that, and she must not be under nobody. So the African man's destiny is tied in to the African people's destiny, and African people's destiny is tied into Africa. The only united Africa can save African people. Matter of fact, our only united socialist Africa, our socialist Africa, we must be socialists, and we must fight a class struggle. The poor class Africans must defeat the rich class all over the world, the dominant class. We must defeat imperialism and capitalism, take over all these companies, take all the wealth and divide it among all the people, and guarantee everybody lights, gas, water, food, medicine, education, and everything they need to live and develop and be prosperous, like they've done in Cuba, like Fidel Castro and other parts of the world. But there must be revolution. And that, so the plight of the brother is tied into the plight of African people, and that we can only survive through a United States of Africa. And I don't divide African people up in terms of what's going on inside the United States, but I look throughout the world and know that I believe in Pan-Africanism, and I know that all our destiny is tied up together. And a total liberated and unified Africa will be what will determine the power and the strength that we would have as a people.
Yes,
do you
sir.
Hear me, Brother Africa?
Yes, sir. Excellent answer. Dear Brother Mukasa, I know we have a lot of our members of our party listening to New Black Panther Party, which you're a member too. And I just wanted to ask this question. We're often criticized, the New Black Panther Party, we're criticized for being pro-black or for having a pro-black nationalist stance. I just wanted to get your feelings on how you feel about it. If the Panther Party should be a carbon copy of the regiment that popped up in Oakland in 66, or how do you feel about it? Should the Panthers be a carbon copy of each other? What do you think that we should do today?
I think you should read Marcus Garvey and listen to men like Malcolm X, Kwame Nkrumah, Sekou Toure, and look to Mao Zedong and look to revolution and come up with greater and better answers. You got to be 1,000 times more political and more educated and more ideologically trained than that old Black Panther was. It lasted for a short period of time and made a very made a small contribution, but your contribution must be greater and it must be more revolutionary. And so you definitely have to do a lot of studying, a lot of research, and come to a point of really understanding revolution, because revolution is not made on emotions. Revolutions are made on scientific study, scientific research, and scientific analysis. So a revolutionary is an organizer and a planner. And that if we are going to be revolutionaries, we got to really analyze what men like Sekou Toure, what men like Mao Zedong, what men like Kwame Nkrumah, what men like Marx, and look around the world at all the revolutionaries and see what a revolutionary is, what a class struggle is, and then see what must be done. But we definitely have to be greater than what we were in the 60s and what the Panther Party or SNCC was in the 60s, because a lot of that was just based on issues and what have you. But now the movement has went much further, and we began to understand and try to understand Marcus Garvey, try to understand Pan-Africanism, and try to understand the importance of having a land. Like if I remember, I don't remember the old Black Panther Party fighting for a land, and our land is Africa. And now we have to fight for Africa, and once we have a United States of Africa, it would put us as an African people in a very powerful and a strong political, economic, and a social position. And that, so we definitely think that all the organizations have got to go through a period of research and gathering information and studying and discussion and try to really come up with what a revolutionary is, because it's in our tradition to be scientific, and revolution is scientific. It's not based on emotions or how we feel. It's not based on how good we rap or how good we can make a little talk, but revolution is based on how well we organize and how well we educate the people, the peasants and the workers and the unemployment workers and the young brothers and sisters we meet in the jails, and what do we educate and how do we train and how do we develop young kids that are here in the streets and what have you, because all of them need political education. In order to give political education, each one of us have to get and be politically educated and be trained as revolutionaries. So we definitely will have to be greater and much greater and take the revolution much farther than what those young Panthers did in the 60s, because they didn't even scrape the foundation of revolution. And but they did, make a little noise. And now we have to really see what Malcolm say. if you knew what a revolution was, you wouldn't use those words so loosely. Otherwise, a revolution is a very, very scientific and a very, very a great force. And that force has to be studied, and we have to really come to find out how do you come to be a revolutionary, because you just don't wake up one tomorrow night, or because you join an organization, wear a uniform, that don't make you a revolutionary, but you really have to be redeveloped, retrained, reeducated, and trained to be a revolutionary. So we all struggling to figure out what a revolutionary is and how to be a revolutionary. And a revolutionary, we have to learn how do we serve our people, how do we treat our people, how do we serve, you know, and be soldiers for our people. And that it's a long process. And matter of fact, and we must have revolutionary relationship with the children, and you know we have to have revolutionary relationship with the women, where our women feel that they're on an equal footing with the men, and on an education and being trained, because revolutionary is a scientific act, and we have to Malcolm said we need to look at other revolutions in order to get an understanding, and that's one of the reasons we all need to study Cuba. And I certainly hope that we come up with a plan where we can send the young brothers and sisters who are in the Panther Party today to spend time in Cuba, and just learn, spend time in Venezuela, spend time in different parts of Africa, and Zimbabwe, and other parts of the world where people are making revolution. We even need people to go and spend time in Palestine and learn what the Palestinians are doing and what their views are, and what the major contradictions in that area of the world. What is Zionism? What is imperialism? What is capitalism? Otherwise, what are we fighting against? And if we say imperialism, then we need to study imperialism and read many, many materials on imperialism and look at the crimes of imperialism and look at the workings of imperialism, where all of us can become great teachers about imperialism. And then when we go to say what we are for, which we would have to be for socialism and communism, which is the same, pretty much the same family, then we have to study what is socialism, how is that an economic system, how would this economic system work, how would it divide the wealth up among the people, how would it guarantee that everybody get medicine and lights and gas and whatever. But we're talking about really solving problems, then we have to really look. And while we're talking about that, I would like to mention that the young people, especially inside the Panther Party and other organizations and community organizations that can hear our voice and know of us, we need to let them know that the young people between 18 and 30 need to get trained on a college level, get in some college and study biology, chemistry, and anatomy, and come to Cuba to medical school. I got 500 scholarships right now that I would like for the young Panthers, young Muslim, young in the organization, or young people that can hear my voice without being in any organization, come to Cuba and go to medical school. If you're interested in it, there's a website, and the website is called IFCO, IFCO, news.org, IFCONews.org, or the telephone number is 212-926-5757. So a revolutionary is a organize a plan or somebody's study, somebody's research. So again, I think that the new Black Panther Party must be 1,000 times better and more educated and more trained and more organized than what the old Black Panther was.
Okay, Bobo, I got a question in the room. What role did your organization play in the formation of RNA?
Um, where the RNA came out of the Black Power movement. When we talked about Black Power in the 60s, and then the rise and rebellions started going off in Detroit, and then the United States just started burning down rebellions, then from that, nationalism grew. And from that nationalism, Pan-Africanism, Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X, and those kind of philosophies became to be dominant. And when those philosophies became, we began to fight and work with the liberation movements in Africa, Angola, Mozambique, South Africa. We began to struggle with the question of identity. And that Malcolm talked about separation. And that so many people come with some solution. Some people came with Garvey's position, let's go back to Africa, and that Back to Africa movement. And then the Black Power movement, from the Black Power movement, people began to take different positions. And one of the positions that grew out of the Black Power movement was the Republic of New Africa. And they went and began to say that we need to be separated, we needed our own land, needed our own government, and what have you. And they wanted to get 5 states in the South, or so many states in the South. And Elijah Muhammad had talked about that early on, getting states in the South and having our own nation, or having our own country. So the New Republic of Africa was really influenced by the Black Power movement of the 60s, and some of the principles or some of the things that came out of it, or some of the people that participated in that, was in the Black Power movement. And matter of fact, a lot of it came out of Detroit, because Detroit had had big riots, and whenever you have those rebellions like that, a growing nationalism rises up. And one of the nationalism that risen, and the ideologies that carried in that nationalism, was the Republic of New Africa developed a philosophy that we needed 5 states in the South, and they even sent people south to organize and fight to get some land in the South. So the Republic, to answer that question, it came out of the Black Power movement.
Yes, sir, my brother. Yes, sir. We're just trying to get this history out of you, because we know that so many of our listeners, you know, are young and don't know. And you're credited with the rally cry of Black Power. Can you tell us how you began to use the rally cry of Black Power, and what is the significance of the Black Power today, the Black Power movement? Where would you like to see it go in 2011? How did you first come up with it, and where would you like to see it go in 2011?
Well, Black Power just came out of the struggle and the hundreds of fights that we had throughout the South and throughout this country, and many fights and struggles that we were engaged in. And from those engagements, we recognized we needed power, and we always talked about power. We always talked about these things are happening to us because we were Black. And at some point, we went on the offense and we said we needed Black Power. And if we had Black Power, we could solve our own problems. And we did that. And when, with Black Power, that gave rise to nationalism, that gave rise to nationalist organization, and what have you. And that from the time we said Black Power, it developed into something higher and different than the time that we said it. Even, you know, though we had many fights and battles over Black Power, but we had to fight for our women to not be ashamed of their hair, their nose, their lips, their skin, a fight to be even called Black at that time, and what have you. But by in the early 65, 66, when we started talking about Black Power, it meant that we needed power. And then Kwame Nkrumah talked about, he wrote a paper, Spectrum of Black Power. Mao Zedong in China, I forgot what his role, he made some statement about the Black Power movement and gave support to it. But what we come to find out, that I think it was Malcolm said that the basis of all power is land. And that when we do research, we see that this land belongs to the native people, and our land is Africa. And that once we realize our land is Africa, and we come from Africa, and we began to look at the Garvey movement and look at the preaching of Malcolm X, where he pointed us toward Lumumba in the Congo. He pointed us toward Kwame Nkrumah in Ghana, who was the first president to gain independence. And when Nkrumah gained independence in Ghana, that was what we called a black power nation. Nkrumah them called it a Pan-Africanist nation. But we recognize that in order to have black power, you got to have a nation. You need your own nation. And that with this black power nation, Ghana, it said that Ghana cannot be true black power until Africa unite. He said United States of Africa would be true black power because we have control of diamonds, gold, oil, rubber, zinc, tea, copper, pearl, cobalt, manganese, and thousands of other fruits and vegetables and waterworks. We could have our own army, build our own bombs, have our own economic system, of course it would be socialist development, and have our own economic system, but we would be in charge, and we could charge for all the stuff that come out of Africa, all the stuff that people need in other countries that Africa possessed that it take to build empires, but that would make Africa one of the most powerful places in the world, and at the same time, if the influence of Africa would be so much black power that it would make us powerful and respectful throughout the world because we would have our own nation, our own country, our own economic system, our own army. And that would be black power. So United States of Africa is black power. And that's why some of our brothers say that black power, Pan-Africanism, is the logical extension of black power. Pan-Africanism, which means the unity of all the people of African descent throughout the world under one ideology and one objective. We must all have the same African ideology. We must all see ourselves as Africans. And once we see ourselves as Africans, we have the proper identity, and then we can begin to move and organize and work toward African unity. But if African people don't unite, wherever we are, right here inside the United States or the Caribbean, if we don't unite, we're going to fight a war or wars among ourselves. And that's one of the reasons that we are killing each other, hurting each other, and what have you, because we are not united. But a United States of Africa will bring on that unity or help bring that unity forward. And then if we're going to get strong here inside the United States or the Caribbean or Africa, we have to unite our people. We have to find a way to bring the gangs, bring the youth together under one philosophy. And that's why I want to go and take the position of King, Martin King, and teach nonviolence. I want to teach all African people to be nonviolent toward each other, toward your wife, toward each group, each neighborhood, each gang. Be nonviolent with each other. Teach each other history. Teach other, use history as our only weapon with each other. Never fight, never kill, never draw a gun, never point a gun at your brother or your sister. But we must go and teach African history and teach our, and use African history as our weapon, a weapon to unite us and bring us together. And that we definitely have to move from hatred into love. So if we're going to have black power, then we definitely have to do it in the form of unity. And if we're going to have unity, we got to teach our people their history, their culture, and give them that identity that it takes to do that. And that's why we need to teach our people more about Africa and more about our greatness and let them know that we were somebody before the Europeans came and robbed us out of Africa. And that so true black power is working together of African people, of course, locally and nationally and worldwide. And true black power is Pan-Africanism, and that's one of the things that we have to do. And we have to use history as the greatest weapon that we have. There's no other weapon greater than the history of Africa and the history of our culture, and giving our people the proper identity that they need to grow forward and to come forward. And therefore, I really want to go out and teach nonviolence to the gangs, nonviolence in our community, where we shouldn't be shooting and killing and murdering each other, shooting our wives, calling each other niggas, and all that. Matter of fact, we need a truth commission. And this truth commission must tell our people the truth, who we are, where we come from, who has invaded us, what they have done to us, where they have scattered us, where all have they scattered us, who were we and where did they get us from. Matter of fact, I think we need to all take DNAs and find out what blood is in us. Zulu blood, Mandingo blood, Hausa blood, Wolof blood, Dinka blood from Sudan, and what bloodline do we come from in terms of Africa? Not talking about how much white blood we have in us, because Malcolm said if you got an ounce of white blood in you, you need to hate every drop of it. And that we ain't trying to find out are we some kin to some white slave master, because that would be tragic. And we don't even want to know nothing like that, because we know that we're no kin to them. But to know and learn more about our roots and learn more about Africa and to know more about the different little tribes that we came from, I think that would be exciting. So black power is to know our true African history and know more about ourselves, which will give us pride and dignity. I hope I answered that question.
Yes, sir. You definitely did.
Yes, sir. What I would really like to know, I would personally like to know, once the Black Panther Party in the 60s from the Oakland chapter developed more, once you all got word of that, what did you think in regard to that? Did you think it was going to be bigger than just locally, or did you know it would advance to the extent that it did?
Well, we made it national. We put them, SNCC was already a national organization. So when they came, when we helped put them together, we let them use our office all over the country, and we took a lot of our local people that was working with SNCC, and we told them to work with the Black Panther Party, and we gave them a national platform. Like, we put them in New York and bought a little group out of Brooklyn, and we put them together, and they worked. They didn't have nothing. They had no office, no typewriters, no nothing, and they were just some kids off the streets, and we bring them into our office around. We had offices all over the country, and we'd bring them in our office, and we would take the little local kids that was working with SNCC, and we would tell them to work with the Black Panther Party. And that's what made them, put them in different places. And the other thing that made them nationally is when we let them use the name Stokely Carmichael and H.R.A.P. Brown, who was two of the most feared names in this country at that time. And by them knowing that we took some young people and put guns in the hand and then put R.A.P. Brown and Stokely as their honorary members and gave them national positions, it made the Black Panther Party known internationally. So we did everything we could to help them be known nationally. And it was SNCC that came up with the idea to send them to Cuba on their first international trip to go to a conference down there and made them internationally known. So we did everything to help them to become nationally known and internationally known.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I always see you in pictures, and you talked about him in your last answer with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Did he support Black Power, or did he come around to it later in life, or how was Martin King towards Black Power?
In the beginning, he supported it, and then the people that was around him pulled him away from it, and at some point, he began to try to run from Black Power and say, we didn't need Black Power, and then especially when the city started burning down and Black nationalism began to flourish and anti-American sentiment began to flourish, the anti-war movement and to burn down the cities and everybody was saying Black Power and people picking up guns and fighting. At first he ran from it, but then after SNCC pushed him to that position and he could not go nowhere, he was pushed to become educated and more educated and more educated. And as he got more educated, he ended up he was forced to take a position against the war in Vietnam. He called the United States the greatest terrorist nation in the world. So he began to get more educated and become more conscious, and that he grew to be a stronger brother than what he started out with Black Power. But many times he tried to run from Black Power, but SNCC pushed him and kept Black Power going. And at one point, he decided that he would condemn America, not condemn the Black Power movement. And when he decided to condemn America and called America the greatest terrorist nation in the world, not the people in Detroit or not the Black Power movement, and he called not the Vietnamese, but he called the United States the greatest terrorist nation in the world and the most violent nation in the world. And once he did that, he began now to take the position of revolutionary, and he began now to take the position of men like Malcolm X and Marcus Garvey, and it scared the United States government to the point that when he made his speech, why I opposed the war in Vietnam, that's when they decided they had to kill him, because they said he was beginning to sound too much like Marcus Garvey, and they didn't want to take a chance on another Marcus Garvey inside the United States, somebody that had a voice and had the ability to unite African people throughout the world. They didn't want to deal with that no more. So that's why they decided to assassinate Martin King. And so Martin King definitely grew, and he was growing and being pushed to take the revolutionary position, and especially positions against imperialism. But as he began to understand the criminal nature of this country and speak it, the United States government decided to kill him. But he definitely grew into a much stronger brother than he was when he first started, and when he was in Washington having a dream, to the point that he now come to a point where he called the United States the greatest terrorist nation in the world. And they killed him after he made the statement on April 4th, why I opposed the war in Vietnam, and he condemned America. On April 4th, 1 year later, on the anniversary, the FBI would attack you on the anniversary of different things, and they attacked him and killed him 1 year later on the anniversary when he made his speech against imperialism and when he spoke out against the war in Vietnam. So they definitely had their plans to kill him, and he was definitely growing and being pushed more toward the people's position. Okay?
Right on, sir. Amir got a question for you.
Okay, what are your thoughts upon Brother Malcolm?
Who?
Brother Malcolm.
Brother Malcolm?
Yes,
that
sir.
He was one of our greatest teachers, and he taught us a lot, and that we should all study Malcolm X. We should take tapes and pass them throughout the community, and we need to listen to Malcolm. We listen to Malcolm. He was definitely educators, and every time you listen to Malcolm, you learn something new, even if you listen to the same tape over and over again. Malcolm was one of our greatest teachers, and that I'm honored to listen and know that I have known Malcolm X.
Well, have you ever been around the brother?
I was in Tuskegee when Malcolm spoke in Tuskegee, and I was also in Selma when Malcolm spoke in Selma. And in 1963, a delegation of SNCC people went to Washington, D.C., and they wanted to take them to see the Empire State Building, whatever, but then somebody suggested they take them to here to see Malcolm X, and they went and sit down with Malcolm X, and Malcolm kept records, and he taped that meeting, and he wrote a little pamphlet called Malcolm Talk to the Youth. So Malcolm definitely had his influence inside of SNCC.
Yes, sir. Getting the history. Dear family, this is Abala Mukasa Ricks, for those that don't know. And so, my dear brother, can you tell us now, you said you went down to Cuba and got some lessons from Castro and Che Guevara. Can you kind of tell us what that was like?
Well, being in Cuba at that time, it was a great nation to be in. And that SNCC went there to many conferences, met people from all over the world, met revolutionaries from all over the world, and we were always influenced by Cuba. Always influenced by Cuba. And Castro has made a great revolution, a great contribution to all our revolutionary movements throughout the world, and he's still making great contribution. Matter of fact, I was just in Cuba about a month ago, and I spoke there at the medical school, and I've traveled throughout Cuba and met many brothers and sisters. I met brothers and sisters who fought in Angola. I met doctors who have served all over the world working for people free. Cuba got 350,000 doctors working in different countries throughout Africa and South and Central America and other places. Cuba got 350,000 doctors that work and work real hard and work free. And they even have doctors in Haiti working and helping people and not and doing their best to serve and help people. And they're humble doctors, and they just want to help. And they just want to serve people, and they're not looking for money or not looking for money from the United States. Matter of fact, if you're in Cuba and you try to get somebody a dollar, they say, I don't want that garbage. I don't want that American money. And they don't want it. They're proud to have Cuban money. So, yes, I definitely have had great experience with Cuba, and Cuba has done so much to serve the world. And that we definitely have to respect and honor the Cuban Revolution, and we have to respect and honor Fidel Castro, and we have to respect and honor the Cuban people.
Yes, sir, most definitely. And so you're a world traveler, known all over the world. Looking, being a world traveler and looking at the condition of our people in the United States, you already said that we need self-knowledge. And I need to know our history and our culture. And so in terms of touching on the gang situation, because you did talk about that, do you think that once we give our the so-called gangs the history and self-knowledge that they'll stand up as a great army, do you think that we can politicize the gangs?
Oh, yes, sir. We have politicized them before. Matter of fact, that was one of the reasons they were scared of the Panther Party in Chicago. That's one of the reasons they killed Fred Hampton, because they thought that the Panthers had the ability to pull the gangs together and unite them. And the FBI said that they were afraid for the Panthers and for the gangs to come together, because if the gangs came together, they would be confronted with an army, a unified army inside the United States. And so that's why they went at the one of the reasons they went at the Panther Party, and that was one of the reasons they went at Fred Hampton and killed him, because they saw them as a unifying force to the gangs, and that they felt that would be a major threat, because that would be an army, a strong army that exists inside the United States. And that's why I said that we got to take our movement to the people and not just sell wolf tickets and that make folks think that we're bad. We got to be humble and let the people and go to the people and sit down and educate them and teach them and not just be confronting and running behind the white man or running behind the police. Every time they shoot somebody, we run out there and act big and bad, but we ain't doing nothing. So what we need to do is have it where we go and organize our people every day and sit down with them and going over books and materials and teaching African history and culture and teaching our little gang brothers to love each other and work together and fight together and not just run behind our issues or run behind the ambulance every time somebody gets shot. We got to be revolutionary, and we got to find out and study what does a revolutionary do. And when we figure out what a revolutionary do and how you organize, how you go to people, how you sit down with people, then once we do that, then we'll be better soldiers and we'll better serve the people.
Yes, sir. I think we got a call. You want to take a call from Carson?
Oh, yes, sir.
What is this, man?
We have 976592. Black Power, you're on the air.
Black Power family, Brother Mukasa, this is Dashaun Farad. How have you been, Elder?
Fine, Brother Africa. How you doing? I know your voice.
Yes, Brother. I'm doing quite well. Now, listen, Brother Mukasa.
Yes, sir.
I've heard you for quite some time speak about our brother Kwame Ture. But what I want to know is, what was it like being around Brother Kwame Nkrumah?
Well, it's just like being around another soldier, just like being around you, because you're a humble soldier, and these men ain't nothing but men, and they're no different than nobody else, and they're just soldiers for Africa. And to be around you and to be around any of the young people that's trying to be activists and trying to be revolutionary, to me, it's all the same. Whether it's around Kwame Ture, around Martin Luther King, around Newton, Bobby Seals, whoever the force that we've been able to be around, they're no different. Sekou Toure, Idi Amin Dada, Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe, all these men are men, and they're just soldiers and humble men that serve their people. So it's no big deal. I feel the same way I feel when I'm around you. Because to me, you're a great little brother. A humble brother, matter of fact. Are you there?
Oh, yes, sir, Brother Mukasa. I'm just sitting up here absorbing, brother, absorbing. I'm going to be very sad when I have to hang up from you, brother, because I can sit and listen to you for hours, as can all of us in the new Black Panther Party.
Well, you always there with me. I always know you, and you always a humble brother. I always appreciate talking to you, and you definitely have been a great influence on my son, Abeku, who's in Cuba, and he's around young people from all over the world and learning about movements and struggles from all over the world. And so he's definitely having a great time in Cuba and enjoying himself. He's in a learning environment. And just to be around the kids from so many different countries in the world and so many struggles and movements is just so educated for him. And I certainly hope that you and all the people around you can look and help us find some more people to send to Cuba, because they definitely would make a better human being of our kids and those that's in, for them to be in Cuba and be outside the United States.
Black Power, we got another call on 214-431. Black Power, you're on Black Power Radio.
Hey, Black Power, Brother Drew X Class.
Go right ahead, dear brother.
One of the questions I wanted to know is, what would be the sense of urgency you think our organization should have?
Say it again.
What would be the sense of urgency that you think all organizations should have at this moment?
get organized and get some people inside your organization and become a part of the people and be more enhanced in the community with the people. And you have to do a lot of different things to serve the people. I think we may even have to go out, since people are hungry now, we may have to go out here and grow some gardens and just do some things to help the people. But I think every organization gonna have to be merged with the people, and you definitely got to get some people inside your groups and with your groups and form some groups, and that we can't just be 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people calling ourselves an organization, but we need now what we be. Have whole communities working with us on different parts and different fronts and different projects of organization. But the organization now has got to become very sophisticated and become a real movement of people. We definitely got to merge ourselves with the people and not just be 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 people calling ourselves a party or organization.
Okay, well, Black Power, appreciate that, and it's a pleasure being in the same world with you, brother, Black Power.
Well, Brother Africa, it's my humble pleasure to be with you and to hear your great voice.
Yes, sir. Got another call, 803-695. Hang up? Okay, you're on there. 803-695, you're on the air with Lucasa Ricks, Black Power Radio, Black Power.
Yo, Black Power, man. Peace and blessings to y'all, family. How y'all doing?
How you doing, African brother?
Yeah. I'm doing great, man. I'm doing real good. Thank you. I've been sitting here, man. I've been really, really absorbing that all that knowledge. You know what I'm saying? Being a young brother myself, I've always, you know, one of the artists that I've always been into was Pac, and I've always followed Pac for as long as I can remember, which got me into studying other different things and this and that, which led me to the Black Party Panther, the Black Panther Party as well. And, you know what I'm saying, just to hear that knowledge tonight, just, you know, I really appreciated that. The question I have is, you know, how does a brother like myself, you know what I'm saying, get involved into that movement? I mean, right now, me and my brother, I guess you could say, you know, we are spoken word artists. So, you know what I'm saying, one of the things that we do is we try to speak knowledge on stage. But I'm asking, how do we get involved from an everyday aspect?
Well, go ahead and get your 4, 5, 6, 7 people, and y'all start sitting down together and start learning what a revolution is, studying the movement, join an organization, join the Panthers, or join some organization, and start sitting down and studying and discussing and listen to tape, listen to Malcolm X. And that's another thing. I don't think enough of us listen to Malcolm X. And I think we need to get Malcolm X and start getting everybody in our communities to listen to him. And we have to make tapes and pass them out, or just call 10 people in your house and say, hey, look, 5 people, let's sit down and listen to Malcolm X together. And sit down and listen to Malcolm X and see who Malcolm X was and what he was saying, and get an understanding of Brother Malcolm. And I think if you get an understanding of Brother Malcolm, it's going to really, really make a difference of your knowledge about yourself, about your history, and about your organization. Another brother that we need to Google, you can Google Kwame Ture, KWAMETURE, and listen to all of his tapes on, you get a lot of them off of Google. Listen to all his tape, very, very, very good, and see what he was saying and what instruction. Listen to people like Malcolm, like Kwame Nkrumah, and began to learn widely about movements and revolution. And the more you do that, then the more you see what you got to do right there in South Carolina, or where you are, because there's a lot of, most people are ready for the movement, but they just need somebody to come now and pull them together, and let's just sit down and start talking and making plans and trying to understand what a revolution is and what must be done. I think that's something we all have to study and try to figure out. But we definitely have to come and be servants to our people. because our people need us to be servants. And I'm not talking about the kind of servant where we just keep running out there confronting police. That's not going to do any good. We got to organize our people where we sit down among ourselves, and we can, once we do that, we'll be in a position to be strong enough to guide and defend our community. But right now, we don't have real organizations in our neighborhood enough, but we definitely have some people with good hearts and good intentions, like the our new Black Panther Party. But we definitely want to see that what we would have, not just 20, 30, 40, 100, but we want to go where we have thousands of young people that's organized and educated and doing things to serve the community. Okay, my young brother.
Oh, yes, most definitely, man. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Brother Africa. Appreciate you.
That's right. And so, Brother Mukasa, we have a few minutes left in the show here. Just want to ask you the last question here. Did you ever get to organize with Dr. Khaled Abdul-Muhammad?
Oh, yes, sir. My colleague Muhammad and I was in Uganda together one time, and I took a delegation to Iraq, and colleague and the other Mohammed guy was on the delegation, and we stayed in Iraq in the guest of Saddam Hussein for about 10 or 12 days, and we went there. And I took them there to meet Saddam Hussein, where they could invite Farrakhan to come to Iraq to be the guest of the Iraqi government. But I took the delegation there to introduce them to the Iraqi government, and I led that delegation, and we introduced Khalid Mohammed and Akbar Mohammed to the Iraqi Baath Party, the Baath Socialist Party in Iraq that was headed by Saddam Hussein, and they gave an invitation to Farrakhan to come to Iraq. And that was in 1986, I think it was. So I spent a lot of time with Khalid Mohammed, and we definitely gave Khalid, after he became independent from the nation, he turned to us and he chose Black Power, and he also chose the Black Panther Party, which it came through Kwame Ture and myself, and he built an independent movement through that. But I definitely spent time, and I wish I had could think of how many programs, how many we spoke together, and we just spent time together. Matter of fact, a couple of years before he died, he spent the time here in Atlanta, and he had a lot of talent, and we just did things together. I've been around him a lot, and I've been around a lot of good brothers like Khalid Mohammed, but he was definitely a good brother and a very educated brother, had a lot of knowledge, and I don't think nobody could preach as hard and strong as he preached. And I knew him from the time he was in the nation to the time he formed the new Black Panther Party, and just did as much as he could to try to organize, educate, and just put information out about African people and about the revolution. But he definitely was a well-studied, well-researched brother and a very serious brother. And so I definitely honored the days and times that we had the opportunity to meet and know Khalid Mohammed.
Yes, sir. And final question out of the chat room. Do you have any communication with Bobby Sue at all today?
Absolutely none.
Yes, sir. Absolutely none.
No, I have none.
Yes, sir.
I haven't heard his voice in years.
Say that again, sir. I'm sorry.
I haven't heard anything from him for years. I don't think he was been too involved in revolutionary movements. To the best of my knowledge, I don't think so. I've been involved in revolutionary movements and in the movement, and that most of the people that I hear from or know people that's involved in the movement in some kind of way or some kind of struggle. But people that's not involved tend not to want to hear my voice or be around me that much. So Mr. Sears is one that I just haven't heard or seen or known in the last 30 or 40 years.
Yes, sir. I think it's final question, Sister Mary.
Yes, I want to know, do you have any contact with David Hilliard? That's what the room said, told me to ask.
No, I haven't seen Mr. Hilliard. I've known Mr. Hilliard since the 60s. I heard about him here every now and then, but I haven't seen him or known him since the 60s.
Yes, sir. Are there any revolutionaries from the 50s or 60s that are still on the battlefront besides yourself?
Well, I'm sure it is. Yes, sir. I could name all of them, but there's a lot of them out there doing a lot of good things and making a lot of contributions that that we wouldn't imagine that they're doing. But it's a whole lot of good people out there that's doing a lot of good things, and definitely the revolutionaries and doing their best to make some kind of change. Yes, a lot of brothers out here and sisters.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And so we're at the end of the show here, Brother Bukasa. We want to ask you finally, is there anything that you want to say in parting to the youth, to the new Panthers that's coming up, to the new Black Nationalists and Revolutionaries? Your closing words and comments to us, sir.
Well, my closing word is that we have to get organized. We have to do as much research as we can on a revolution, and we must tell our people the truth. Stop using the word nigger. We Africans, and we must be proud to be Africans. Let everybody know that we Africans. Stop doubting our women. Don't call them B's and H's, but respect them as revolutionaries, as queens, princes, goddesses, and what have you. And don't fight among ourselves, but teach our people the truth. Study African history and give our people the truth where they would know the truth. And we need to set up the truth and take the truth to the mass of the people and let our people know who they are, where they come from, what their cultures are, what their histories are, and let our people know the crimes that you and the United States has committed against them, and we must be revolutionaries and be soldiers for the people. And again, I want to thank the New Black Panther Party and thank Mother Africa for inviting me to come on the show, and thank you, African brother. And I want to thank y'all for your eloquent and most intelligent and most political program and show, and just thank you for having me on it. Oh, one other thing. I would like to just remind you that the Cuban medical program is there for any listeners that won't got children or know somebody that want to go to medical school free, 100% scholarship. You can call 212-926-5757, and you can get all the information about the scholarship.
We're
looking for young people to put in medical school. Yes, my sister?
No, again, I just really, really want to thank you, and I am so impressed with this interview. This has been yet my best interview that I have done upon the Black Power Radio Show. On behalf of the, National Committee, which you're on as well, we want to thank you, and give you a Black Power. I appreciate you.
Well, I give you a Black Power right back. And thank you, Mother Africa.
Thank you.
So is that good night? So long live the revolution, long live Africa, and long live all the revolutionaries. Good night.
Good night to you, Brother Baba Bukasa. Brothers and sisters, that is Baba, that's an elder, a living legend, Brother Bukasa Ricks. And again, I would just say, rewind the tape when this interview goes off. Rewind the tape. This is a historical gem that all of us should study. We have to study and take the jewels from it to build a Black Power movement that will create liberation and salvation for the Black nation. And so again, make sure that you join us once again this Monday Join us Monday at 11 p.m. Eastern Time for another strong, bold, beautiful edition of Black Power Radio. And we appreciate you and thank you for listening. And we leave you as we came, always in peace with blessings, but always with Black Power.
Until the philosophy which hold one race superior and another inferior.